Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to address many of the issues that people have questions about. For example, egg consumption. Cancer Prevention Research has an interesting article, University of California. And also, there's a dual plants that can promote weight loss. We'll talk about that. And nutrients to combat the modern stress epidemics. New research from Jeffrey Castell. And halt the sugar-induced cell aging. Big reason that we age prematurely is because of the amount of sugar. And that is not good. So Kara Michaels has some new information on that. We'll also look at melatonin. For those of you who have Huntington's disease, new research published in the Journal of Neuroscience. And green tea protects against weight gain. Also, how resveratrol, the nutrient in grapes, combats breast cancer. And vitamin B6 and B12 can help over the age of 50 if you have depression, and much more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at a lot of important social issues that are relevant today. I'll have a brief newsmaker update with Richard Gale on a special press conference on the air for tomorrow night with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, whose film on vaccines was banned by the Tribeca Film Festival and Robert De Niro after initially saying yes, he wanted it because his son has autism and he felt that there should be an open dialogue. All across the media, from Barron's to the Wall Street Journal to the Washington Post to the New York Times to Variety, everywhere there was a systematic campaign. Interesting, all of them using the same talking points to denounce Wakefield. Even on the liberal media blogs, they were denouncing him. The trouble is they were all wrong, every single one. And tomorrow I'll be releasing a brand new article called Killing the Messenger and uncovering the cover-up on the vaccine autism connection. My research that is based upon pure scholarship will examine the actual scientific literature and show you that all those people saying, you know, this is not even an issue, it's been proven that there is no vaccine autism connection, they're all wrong. How could they be wrong if they have all the resources to find the truth? Well, there's an assumption that they're looking for the truth. What if they're not? We'll present you with the truth and the science to back it up. So once and for all, everyone who wants the truth will have it, and those who don't want the truth will dismiss it. But it'll be there, and then we'll have a two-hour special. Also, I've heard many statements of people purporting over the internet to know what they're talking about when it comes to Wakefield and the challenges against him. Once again, they're incorrect. So I will present tomorrow evening a special in-depth report, including interviews with the 12 parents of autistic children who are part of the original study on looking at inflammation in the intestines of their children. And then they're the ones, not Wakefield and his team, suggesting an association with the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. In fact, every single person in that study was pro-vaccine. Every one of the doctors. Walker Smith, who was the head of that, not Wakefield. Wakefield was only one of the members. And we'll show you stuff you did not know. I can promise you I will be reading documents from the court that will show you the truth about Wakefield, the MMR vaccine, autism, and it's completely at variance with everything that we've been led to believe in the American media. So everything you're seeing, plus all the trolls, and it was clear if you look at the comments after some of the articles that these are trolls. So I'm going to have an expert on trolls on tomorrow also, talking about this. And not to fear, because we will get the film shown. That you can bet on. And we will have more people watch it than ever would have watched it at the Tribeca Film Festival. That will happen in the next 30 days, and I'm taking over that just to make sure it gets done. So they won the first round, but it's not over. Also today, a comment. I was watching some of the people on television talk about how any statement against Israel is really anti-Semitic. No, it isn't. We'll deal with that. And also, University of California now has adopted a policy linking anti-Zionism to anti-Semitism. So you can't, at that university, make any comment about Israel unless it's praising. Wow, what a wonderful concept. Complete censorship. Groupthink. Say what we want you to say, or you'll be punished. And this is the university. Also, from Chris Hedges, we are all Islamic State, Truth Dig. And I heard someone say, in fact, all the presidential candidates saying we have to get in there and do something about ISIS after this bombing, and that they're winning. And then on Sunday, all of the top people, current or ex-military, who all work for think tanks and their salaries are never discussed, how much they're paid to be there is never discussed. How much their firms that profit off going to war never discussed. So I did the math. So I added up all the number of people killed by Islamic terrorists and going clear back to 1991. And then I added up all the innocent civilians killed in our response to terrorism. Gee whiz, there's a big difference. So for those who are saying the terrorists are winning, based upon what math are you using? I'll share that today. As you see, we have a lot to deal with. So let's begin. One of the reasons that we age prematurely and we suffer many debilitating conditions, not the least of which is metabolic syndrome, which can include high blood pressure, heart disease of different types, and death, and diabetes, is the amount of sugar in the diet. It really plays havoc with our cells. We now know the mechanisms behind the accelerated destruction of cells and tissues and organs, and it's called glycation, G-L-Y-cation, C-A-T-I-O-N. That's a very harmful binding of sugars and proteins, where sugars bind to proteins. The result is a sugar protein complex known as advanced glycation end products, or AGE. I've mentioned this many times. You have a wheat berry, a wheat sprout, which is great. And by the way, if you have livestock, growing wheat and letting your animals graze off the wheat berries is terrific for their health. And in fact, that was one of the first ways that Americans consumed a dietary supplement. This went way back to the 1930s when a farmer noticed that in the spring, the horses and the cattle, they really went for the little wheat shoots, and they were always healthier. And then he compressed this wheat into little tablets. That was like the first type of, you know, supplements that was out there. In any case, the way that we end up getting a wheat into a flour, into bread, into toast, each one of those stages denatures it, destroys enzymes, antioxidants, alters phytonutrients, until the worst product at all is that piece of toast at the end. The browning of almost anything, the browning of a bagel, a donut, a french fry, a pizza crust, that's all part of this age process, the advanced glycation end product. So just understand, you may like the taste of things that are browned, like hash brown potatoes, but your cells are going to be injured because of them, and you put yourself at greater risk of prematurely aging the cell. So scientists have confirmed that this destructive process occurs in healthy individuals when blood glucose levels are sustained above 85 milligrams per deciliter of blood. And that's a commonplace occurrence after a heavy meal is consumed. The damage inflicted by glycation is irreversible. So once you damage that, it's damaged. Now, what can you do about it? Well, you're not going to get a nation to stop eating French fries and pizzas, unfortunately, because we're addicted to the taste and the mouthfeel and the smell. But there is a couple things that will make a difference. And one of them is a relative of the B1 called benfotiamine. B-E-N-F-O-T-I-A-M-I-N-E. Now, what it does, it protects your cells to prevent glycation and the accelerated aging triggered by elevated sugar levels. So everyone who's overweight, everyone who's pre-diabetic or diabetic, should be consuming this on a daily basis. It's inexpensive, it's very safe, and it can lower your risk of heart disease, stroke, kidney damage, vision loss, by neutralizing the impact of excess glucose and subsequent glycation. And just understand something. When you cook something, like you brown a piece of meat, most people want their meat browned because they know it kills a lot of the bacteria and that's how they're used to eating it. But that browning process, chemically known as Maillard reaction, involves exactly the same chemical changes that occur in your tissues when they're exposed to excess sugar. Glucose, in effect, slowly cooks the body, thereby hastening the aging process. And Maillard, that's M-A-I-L-L-A-R-D, browning, explaining many age-related conditions such as cataracts in the eyes and atherosclerosis and neurological deterioration and stiffening of connective tissues and joints. And so the more cooked something is, the more damaging it is for your cells. So just remember, the generation of advanced glycation aid projects stiffens the proteins in your body just as it does in cooked meats, causing them to lose their natural flexibility. And it doesn't take much to imagine the devastating changes this creates throughout your body. And these are potent oxidizers. Now, you've heard me mention that the body doesn't want oxidative stress. Well, you're creating oxidative stress every time you eat something that is cooked, causing massive inflammation. And benfotiamine blocks the glucose damage. So, something that can benefit us and is easy to take in. Now, another thing that can help also are the polyphenols. And that's why if you're taking in blueberries, cherries, pomegranate, that can also benefit. So just make sure you're getting these things in there. They can help make a difference. Next up, we are a very stressed society. Now, we're not going to change most of the things that stress us. But what we can do is we can change how we're going to have the body respond to these stressors. And a couple of things we can do that really make a difference, because when you're stressed, a whole host of age-accelerating conditions and degenerative diseases follow. The more stressed you are, the faster you age. And two natural compounds in particular have been shown to reduce stress levels, enhance your attention and productivity, and lower many stress-related factors associated with the risk of death. I'll give you just two. One is lemon balm, and the other is L-theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. That's an amino acid, and it's found in green tea. By the way, historically, lemon balm has been used to have a calming effect, and while L-theanine has been found to soothe anxiety without side effects. And lemon balm and its chief component is called rosmarinic acid. It also has quercetin and gallic and rutin and quercetin. These are all potent antioxidants that protect brain cells and other tissues from reactive oxygen species. And lemon balm tea, for example, is used to protect radiology technicians from oxidating effects of chronic occupational exposure to low-level radiation. And lemon balm and rosmarinic acid also boost levels of the relaxation-inducing neurotransmitter called GABA in the brain. And they do so by inhibiting the enzyme that normally degrades GABA. And the result of these lemon balm-induced elevations of GABA is just a reduction in anxiety. So if you're anxious, if you're feeling apprehension, if you're feeling overwhelmed, you want an increase in brain GABA activity, and instead of some anti-anxiety medication, which is really bad in dependency forming. And rosmarinic acid inhibits acetylcholine esterase, an enzyme that breaks down acetylcholine and reduces its availability to brain cells. And this effect is similar to that produced by prescription drugs meant to treat Alzheimer's. And generally it's in the range of about 600 milligrams lemon balm produced sustained improvement. And there's a lot of good science out there on this. And the other is L-theanine, which is a non-protein amino acid found exclusively in green tea. And it contributes significantly to the favorable taste of green tea and has a number of health-promoting benefits. And most important, it just relaxes you. It improves concentration and learning abilities. And generally at about 200 milligrams. And there's a reason why, because L-theanine is chemically related to the neurotransmitter glutamate and binds to glutamate receptors in the brain. Unlike glutamate, however, which can cause a state of excitotoxicity that can eventually damage nerve cells, L-glutamine protects your brain cells against excitotoxicity, calming the nerve network in the brain. And so to relax, to de-stress, lemon balm and L-theanine, and those two work terrifically together. For those of you who are consuming eggs, not good. According to some important research, after they looked at men for 20 years, 27,000 men were followed, and they found, published in Cancer Prevention Research, that eggs can increase men's risk of developing more lethal forms of prostate cancer. How much so? If you had 2.5 eggs or more a week, not a day, you increased your risk by 81% of developing lethal prostate cancer compared to men who ate fewer than half an egg a week. So that's the first study that I'm aware of showing that connection to increased risk of prostate cancer, 81%. Wow. So we don't want people doing that. There was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial where they got 400 milligrams twice a day of an extract prepared from the indicus flower and also mangosteen. And mangosteen, fruit rind, these two things were done on a daily basis, and people lost weight, a lot of weight, after just 2 weeks. Two things that can make a difference in our health. Also, another study showed that green tea protects against weight gain in mice. This is published in Obesity from Penn State University. And why? Because the chemical EGCG, epigallocatechin 3 gallate, and it occurs in green tea and helps people lose weight. And resveratrol, according to an Italian and research study with Americans, inhibits the growth promoting effects of estrogen in breast cancer cells. That's good news for women. That's why grapes, grape seed, grape skin, eating grapes, drinking grape juice, and the resveratrol, which it is in it, is believed to be one of the compounds responsible for the benefits associated with lowered cancer, breast cancer rate. So, now we know, to help prevent breast cancer, have, I would say, 100 to 200 milligrams a day of resveratrol. And from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they found that vitamin B6 and vitamin B12 protects against depression in aging adults. So that's good. And I would say 25 milligrams of B6 and 1 milligram of methylated B12 a day, and that will help you prevent the problem of depression as you grow older. And melatonin prolongs life of animal model of Huntington's disease, and this is published in the Journal of Neuroscience. Melatonin is what most people take to get a better night's sleep, and what we know is melatonin receptors were found on the cell's mitochondria, which produce energy. And the researchers observed that the receptors were depleted in animals with Huntington's, a finding that also detected in brain tissue derived from humans affected with the disease. So the takeaway message is, if you suffer from Huntington's disease, by all means, start implementing a program that includes melatonin, generally 1 to 2, 3 milligrams a night. That's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
I'm going to play John Henry here this evening for you all, and I'm going to tell you why John Henry Field did. Sitting at home with his mother's knee, crying that big in a tunnel on that wire. Mama's gonna be the death.
How many of you know that singer? Long ago. We're going to hear a little segment now about something that we just never hear about. The truth about Native American history in one of the worst slaughters, if not the worst slaughter, of Indian peoples in the United States. These were the Indians of California. Please listen in.
The Indians formerly subsisted on game, fish, acorns, etc. But it is now impossible for them to make a living by hunting or fishing, for nearly all the game has been driven from the mining region or has been killed by the thousands of our people who now occupy the once quiet home of these children of the forest. Edward A. Stevenson.
Near the crowded gold fields, Indians found it harder and harder to find food. Some began to steal. The miners despised them all as diggers. One California law made it legal to declare any jobless Indian a vagrant, then auction his services off for up to 4 months. And it permitted whites to force Indian children to work for them until they were 18, provided the permission of what the law called a friend was obtained first. Whites hunted down adult Indians in the mountains, kidnapped their children, and sold them as apprentices for as little as $50. If ever an Indian was fully and honestly paid for his labor, one white settler said, it was not my luck to hear of it. Indians could not complain in court because by another California statute, no Indian or black or mulatto person was permitted to give evidence in favor of or against a white person.
The miners are sometimes guilty of the most brutal acts with the Indians. Such incidents have fallen under my notice that would make humanity weep and men disown their race. William Swain.
We hope that the government will render such aid as will enable the citizens of the North to carry on a war of extermination until the last redskin of these tribes has been killed. Extermination is no longer a question of time. The time has arrived. The work has commenced. And let the first man that says treaty or peace be regarded as a traitor. Eureka Herald, 1853.
Indians continued to die from diseases the white man had inadvertently introduced among them. But now, thousands more were being killed deliberately.
The bold volunteers crept on them before day and killed about 9 men, the balance escaping. The women and children remained, trusting that an American would not murder women and children. In this they were mistaken. The Americans searched around among the haystacks with a hatchet and split the children's heads open. In this way, there were over 40 women and children butchered.
The towns of Marysville and Honey Lake paid bounties for Indian scalps. Shasta City offered $5 for every Indian head brought to City Hall. And California's state treasury reimbursed many of the local governments for their expenses.
It was of no unfrequent occurrence for an Indian to be shot down in cold blood, or a squaw to be raped by some brute. Such a thing as a white man being punished for outraging an Indian was unheard of. It was the fable of the wolf and the lamb every time. General George Crook.
There were some 150,000 Indians in California before the 49ers came. By 1870, there would be fewer than 30,000. It was the worst slaughter of Indian peoples in United States history.
That's over 120,000 slaughtered. And yet, ask the average person on any college campus. I defy anyone in this audience to go to Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Columbia. Ask the professors, not the professors of history, but any other professor. What was the largest slaughter of American Indians? They won't know. No one will know. And that's unfortunate. But that shouldn't surprise us, because we're very good at demonizing people. You can't hurt someone. You can't have people killed unless you first show that they have no value, that they are without merit. So when I watch the people on the talking heads, who are all supposed to be experts, they're all neocons, they're all people who believe in the major trades, privatization, and they're telling me about how ISIS is such a threat that we should expend unlimited amounts of money, and we should go into all these territories and put boots on the ground. And I'm thinking, well, wasn't that the reason that we have this blowback to begin with? Because of all the people we've hurt in these foreign countries and putting boots on the ground and replacing their governments with governments that we wanted? But they didn't talk about that. They just said more money to be spent. So I did a little math. Here's what I came up with. And it's relatively simple and straightforward. But I chose to use the most conservative figures. The more realistic figures are 5 times the amount. First, we have, over the last 15 years, the Islamic militants have carried out 5 major coordinated attacks on Western European targets: New York, Washington, Madrid, London, Paris, and Brussels. They've killed 3,402 people. But let's also include some of the people killed in Israel, if you want to include that, and around in Russia, the attacks that occurred in Russia, along with all the less massive attacks on U.S. and European soil, 693. That brings us to 4,560. That's on one side of the ledger. That's terrible. Every one of those families will tell you that to them, that's a major loss. But we never look at the loss on the other side. According to Brown University's Cost of War study, they have 92,000 Afghans killed by the U.S. invasion, 165,000 Iraqis, but that was since 2003. And I have estimates as high as a million on that. In Pakistan, but we'll take the lower figure, in Pakistan, 57,000, and in Libya, 3,000, but that figure is really, really small. But still, I'm using America's own conservative figures. And then how about Syria? Well, remember, the Syrians, we created that war. We made it look like it was an Arab Spring rising. It was not. And that's 250,000. And then if you take a look at Israel in the north, in Lebanon, and that's another 1,200 Lebanese dead. And so I added these up. And even in Egypt, after we gave the General al-Sisi our support, according to Human Rights Watch, they carried out premeditated massacre of 817 peaceful protesters in Rabah Square on August 14, 2013. We didn't say a word. That was not important because he was an ally. So add up all the figures, and what do you get? Well, the most conservative figure is 775,000. Well, divide 4,500 into that, and you get 170 times more people killed on their side than they killed. So how is it they're winning? I'm confused about the numbers. How is it we have the Air Force, we have the submarines, we have the ships, we have over a million people trained, we have over 900 bases minimum, and we have over $1 trillion a year we're spending, and yet they're winning? No, they're not winning. We killed a minimum of 170, but more likely 300 times more. And also, we look at none of the inconvenient truths. Dan Kovalevic of Counterpunch gave us a few of these. I'll share a few. One, Gaddafi's troops did not engage in mass rapes. We were told we can go in there because of this. It was a big lie. And that was one of the big lies of 2011. Was told by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton about Libya as a means to justify regime change in the country, a goal not authorized by either the U.S. Congress or the U.N. Thus, with a straight face, Mrs. Clinton told the press that Gaddafi was passing out Viagra to his troops so that they could go out and rape dissidents en masse, and that the troops were indeed engaged in mass rapes, we were told. Of course, the compliant media was more than happy to spread such outlandish accusations. What the press was more reluctant to do was to publish Amnesty International's later report showing there was absolutely no factual support of this at all. Quote, Amnesty International, quote, not only have we not met any victims, but we have not even met any persons who have met victims. So there was zero truth to that. Then the Nato-backed Libyan rebels have committed egregious human rights abuses. And ironically, the NATO-supported rebels themselves did engage in verifiable acts of rape against civilians. So Mrs. Clinton could take credit for the rape of civilians by the people that her State Department, Obama's White House, and his National Security Agency and the CIA were arming. We were arming, along with the French, and that's one of the reasons they attacked the Benghazi annex, because Stevens was selling and running arms out of Benghazi on boats across over to Syria. So here's the irony. You could say that Hillary Clinton enabled rape of countless women in Libya, and the press didn't touch it, and yet the rape she claims by Gaddafi's soldiers didn't happen at all. Also, Hillary Clinton told another lie when she adamantly denied, quote, any U.S. involvement in any acts of violence inside Iran. I wonder if Netanyahu wrote that for her. Indeed, the U.S. has been supporting terrorist attacks within Iran for years. As Seymour Hersh reported as far back as 2008 in a New Yorker piece, the U.S. has been supporting the terrorist group Mujahideen al-Khalq, known as in the West as MEK, for some time. As Hersh knows, quote, the MEK has been on the State Department's terrorist list for more than a decade, yet In recent years, the group has received arms and intelligence directly and indirectly from the United States, end quote. In addition, as Hirsch related back in 2008, the U.S. has been supporting, quote, the Kurdish party PJAK, which has been operating against Iran from bases in northern Iraq for at least 3 years. So, A, they lied, and B, we've been involved on the ground supporting terrorist groups against Iran for years. While the U.S. points to provocative acts committed by Iran since its revolution in 1979 to justify the continued vilification of that country, what no one in the media talks about is what we did in 1953. U.S. President and Prime Minister of England met, and they decided that it wasn't a good idea to have a democratically elected president in Iran, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, and he was accused of nationalizing British oil. He was still going to give money. It's just he wasn't going to let them keep it all. They were going to be able to share the money with the Iranian citizens and the English. No, they wanted it all. So they replaced Mossadegh in a coup sponsored by the United States. And who did they put in their place? A man without question to be considered a genocidalist, the Shah of Iran. A massive sociopath who was brutal, and he had a torturous group of criminals, sociopaths, called the SAVAK, S-A-V-A-K. That was their secret police, which was created and funded exclusively by the United States until 1979 when Iran's revolution occurred. So why isn't the truth about why Iran, that has not invaded any country in over 200 years, and yet we got Iraq and Saddam Hussein to invade it in an eight-year war that cost over a million Iranians their lives. We take no responsibility for that. We supplied him, we supplied Saddam Hussein with gas that he used against Iranians and the Kurds. We take no credit for that. We ousted a democratically elected leader, a pacifist, by the way, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh. We take no credit for that. We put one of the worst tyrants, he's right up there with Pol Pot, just not in total number of people killed with Khmer Rouge. We take no credit for it. And also, while you would believe from the press that the Soviet Union ignited the conflict in Afghanistan by invading the country in 1979, and that the U.S. reacted by supporting covert operations by the Mujahideen, by the way, the Mujahideen who counted Osama bin Laden as one of its leaders, later becoming the nucleus of Al-Qaeda, so you could say we created Al-Qaeda. We gave the empowerment to Osama bin Laden. Actually, it's not true. Indeed, the reverse is true. Such covert operations were started by the United States before the Soviet Union invaded. We were there first. And in fact, we designed this whole plan to draw the Soviet into a Vietnam-like quagmire. And the United States National Security Advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, admitted this. He actually wrote about it. Quote, that secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap. And you want me to regret it? The day of the Soviets officially crossed the border, I wrote to President Carter, we now have the opportunity of giving the USSR its Vietnam War. Indeed, for almost 10 years, Moscow had to carry out a war unsupported by the government, a conflict that brought about the demoralization and finally the breakup of the Soviet Empire, end quote. But just so you understand, we created the conflict in Afghanistan that enticed the Russians in. So all the damage, everything that happened, we were the architect of. So then who are the worst human rights abusers in the Western Hemisphere? They're our allies. But who do we condemn? Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela? We criticize them for their human rights policies. And yet our allies were the bad guys. Colombia's human rights record is horrendous from top to bottom. Thus, largely because the forced displacement carried out by the Colombian military and its paramilitary death squad allies, Colombia has the largest internally displaced population in the world at over 5 million. Colombia has around 7,500 people in prison who can be characterized as political prisoners or prisoners of conscience. And the paramilitary allies of the Colombian government have killed around 150,000 civilians since the mid-1990s. They've disappeared another 50,000 civilians. And in terms of government violence against its own people, close U.S. ally military recipient Mexico currently runs second to Colombia with about, well, we figure 100,000 plus killed in the war on drugs in Mexico alone. But that could be a very underestimated figure. And yet there are allies. Gee whiz. And back in Guatemala, we had a U.S.-sponsored military dictatorship installed by the U.S. in 1954. They killed around 200,000 civilians, mostly Mayan Indians, during the Civil War in the 1980s and 90s. So why can't the American media ever get it right? Just once, I'd like to see anyone from any media tell the truth. Are they stupid? Not at all. Do they not have these facts available? They have them available. They're just not going to share them with you. And that brings me to this issue. Did any of you hear anything about Yemen? Well, Yemen is the poorest country in the Middle East. And yet Saudi Arabia has had over a one-year campaign that has caused 80% of the people in Yemen to be needing aid, food, water, medicine. They've killed with their indiscriminate aerial attacks 6,400 people, over half civilians. They've injured over 30,000, but they don't have hospitals or medical supplies. They've displaced 2.5 million, according to U.S. report. And about 20 million people now need of aid. And yet this was the terrorists of Saudi Arabia. Not a word said. When you got 20 million people who need aid, and you've got a rogue state that gives us money for weapon systems and oil, and we give them money for oil, not a good idea. Oh, and by the way, for those around Donald Trump and some very bizarre people, and Ted Cruz, you keep saying the victims. Please get it right. Muslims are the victims of between 82 and 90%, 97% of terrorism-related fatalities. That's correct. In cases where the religious affiliation of terrorist casualties can be determined, Muslims suffer up to 97% of terrorism-related fatalities over the past 5 years. So the terrorist attacks are mainly hurting other Muslims. And yet you don't seem to get that in there. But then again, if you're anti-Muslim, why would you want to show that they're actually suffering? Revenge is the psychological engine of war. According to Chris Hedges, victims are the blood currency. Their corpses are used to sanctify acts of indiscriminate murder. Those defined as the enemy and targeted for slaughter are rendered inhuman. That's why I played that piece earlier about how many over 120,000 Native Americans were killed in California alone, yet it doesn't exist in any history book in the United States that kids read. So what we're looking at is people who we say are unworthy of empathy or justice. Pity and grief are felt exclusively for our own. We vow to eradicate a dehumanized mass that embodies absolute evil. The maimed and the dead in Brussels or Paris, and the maimed and dead in other parts of the world, well, that's not the way it works. The tit-for-tat game of killing will not end until exhaustion, until the culture of death breaks us emotionally and physically. We use our drones, our warplanes, our missiles, our artillery to rip apart walls and ceilings and blow out windows and kill or wound those inside. It's all indiscriminate. Our enemies pack peroxide-based explosive in suitcases or suicide vests and walk into airport terminals or concert halls or cafes or subways and blow us up and along with themselves. If they had our technology of death, they would do it more efficiently, but they do not. Their tactics are cruder, but morally they are the same as us. T.E. Lawrence called this cycle of violence the ring of sorrow. The Christian religion embraces the concept of holy war as fanatically as Islam does. Our crusades are matched by the concept of jihad. Once religion is used to sanctify murder, there are no rules. It is a battle between light and dark, good and evil, Satan and God. Rational discourse is banished. And the sleep of reason, as Goya said, brings forth monsters. Flags, patriotic songs, a deification of the warrior, and sentimental drivel drowned out all reality. We communicate in empty cliches and mindless patriotic absurdities. Mass culture is used to reinforce the lie that we are the true victims. It recreates the past to conform to the national heroic myth. We alone are said to possess virtue and courage. We alone have the right to revenge. We are hypnotized into a communal state, induced blindness. Those we fight, lacking our industrial machines of death, kill up close. But killing remotely does not make us less morally deformed. Long-distance killing, epitomized by drone operators at Air Force bases within the United States who go home for dinner, is as depraved. These technicians make the vast machinery of death operate with a terrifying clinical sterility. They depersonalize industrial war. They're the little Eichmanns. This organized bureaucracy of killing is the most enduring legacy of the Holocaust. We torture kidnapped captives, many held for years in black sites. We carry out targeted assassinations of so-called high-value targets. We abolish all civil liberties. We drive millions of families from their homes. Those who oppose us do the same. They torture and behead, replicating the execution style of the Christian crusaders with their own brave brand of savagery. They rule as despots. Pain for pain, blood for blood, horror for horror. There is a fearsome symmetry to the madness. It is justified by the same religious perversion. It is the same abandonment of what it means to be a human. It was at least one of my favorite psychologists, Rollo May. How many of you remember him? He wrote, "At the outset of every war, we hastily transform our enemy into the image of the demonic. And then, since it is the devil we are fighting, we can shift onto the war footing without asking ourselves all the troublesome and spiritual questions that the war arouses. We no longer have to face the realization that those we are killing are persons like ourselves. The killing and torture, the more they endure, contaminate the perpetrators and the society that condones their actions. They sever the professional inquisitors and killers from the capacity to feel. They feed the death instinct. They demand the moral injury of war. 22 veterans of U.S. military service commit suicide every 24 hours. They do it without an explosive belt, but they share with suicide bombers the overpowering urge to be rid of the world and the sordid role they had in it. Who are we to condone the indiscriminate murder of civilians? Have we forgotten our bombings of Germany and Japanese cities in World War II that left 800,000 civilian women and children and men dead? What about those families we obliterated in Dresden, 135,000 dead, Tokyo, 97,000 dead, Hiroshima, 80,000 dead, Nagasaki, 66,000 dead? What about the 3 million civilians left dead behind in Vietnam? We dropped 32 bombs, tons of bombs per hour on North Vietnam between 1965 and 68, hundreds of Hiroshimas. And as Nick Turse writes in his book, Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, this tonnage does not count the millions of gallons of chemical defoliants, millions of pounds of chemical gases, and endless canisters of napalm, cluster bombs, high explosive shells, and daisy cutter bombs that obliterated everything within a 10 football field diameter. Anti-personnel rockets, high-explosive rockets, incendiary rockets, grenades by the millions and myriad different kinds of mines. Have we forgotten the millions who died in our wars and proxy wars in the Philippines, the Congo, Laos, Cambodia, Guatemala, Indonesia, El Salvador, and Nicaragua? Have we forgotten the 1 million dead in Iraq and 92,000 in Afghanistan? Have we forgotten the nearly 8 million people we have driven from their homes in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Syria? There have been 87,000 coalition sorties over Iraq and Syria since the air campaign against Islamic State began. This is the newest chapter in our endless war against the wretched of the earth. Back in a moment, we're going to take a call, talk back. You'll have a chance to share your comments. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. In a moment, we're going to go to Richard Gale and talk about what we're going to hear tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour based upon the censorship of and Dr. Andrew Wakefield's movie at the Tribeca Film Festival by Robert De Niro and the forces behind that. And then all the trolls that are out there in the mainstream media applauding this. And we'll tell you the truth, and there'll be an exclusive article that will be published tomorrow that will have every single quality scientific study verifying the connection between autism and vaccines, something that you will have that the editors of the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN refuse to examine because they're caught up in the corporate lie. Now, let me also mention that coming up in 10 weeks, I'm going to begin a series of health support groups all at the same time on a Saturday afternoon at a beautiful, I had to get a new venue, by the way. I've never before had one venue that was large to begin with completely filled up with one mention. So I've got a larger venue. Again, it's on the Upper West Side. We'll be meeting for 3 hours every other week for 3 months. And the areas that we're going to focus on are people with diabetes, high blood pressure, overweight, depression, and anti-aging and menopause. Our goal is through lifestyle and behavior modification to be able to change people's habits, and hence at the end of 3 months, we should see measurable improvements in people's health, aging. We're going to focus on healthier skin and hair and reversing loss of hair and energy and getting your hormones rebalanced again naturally, getting your vigor, your vitality, getting your blood sugar and your blood pressure, getting your mass body weight down to what it should be. So that's our goals, and I have all new information, all new protocols, brand new. So I'm very excited. We're going to change people's habits and hence change the outcome, have people living longer, healthier lives. If you want to join us, I'll give you a number to call. If it's busy, please be patient, all right, because I'm expecting a lot of people. You can call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, begins first week of June. Let's say hello to Richard Gale. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Good afternoon, Gary.
Let people know what we're going to be doing tomorrow night and
yes,
why.
Yes, I just won't go into too much detail, but many of the listeners have probably heard about the brouhaha with the Tribeca Film Festival and Robert De Niro, who's one of the main sponsors and conveners of the festival, has first agreed to show and officially select Andrew Wakefield's new documentary, Vax, which deals with the whistleblower from the CDC, William Thompson. And then subsequently, due to pressure from various politicized forces in the medical establishment, both federal and private, he rescinded that. The film will not be shown. And just to let listeners know that both Gary and I, over the weekend and all, we've had conversations with Andy Wakefield, and we are going to be coming to his aid and assistance, and there will be more forthcoming on that. Obviously, there's a lot that's going on in Andy's camp after this event and with his attorneys and all. So, but for tomorrow, we're planning on doing what could be a press conference. And there will be more information on the certainly by tomorrow's noon show on who will be appearing on that. Hopefully, Andy will be participating in that, along with some experts or an expert or two on how the medical machine actually functions and operates through corporations and medical foundations, the federal health agencies, the medical associations, and how do they operate to censor any kind of health advocates who would criticize the dominant paradigm or conventional medical protocols such as vaccination in order to be able to silence this information from the larger public. So that's what we're planning for tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network during your Progressive Commentary Hour.
Okay, thank you, Richard. And I will have done by tomorrow a brand new article, definitive article, showing the actual science of vaccines causing autism. So, and also you'll be hearing from the 12 people, and I'll read you a letter where they completely challenge everything that Brian Deer and the British medical community and the media says about Andrew Wakefield and the doctors who work with their children. Dean from Long Island. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Gary. First of all, just thank you so much for everything that you do. I just want to say quickly, coming from a young person, I was a history major in college, I'm just so ashamed and really disgusted with the way that, you know, our country acts around the world, the amount of innocent people that we have killed, and yet here we are where most citizens are brainwashed and think, go America and everything like that. But let me just say one thing really quickly. One thing that we can all easily do to make a change is to stop eating meat. 51% of the greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change come exclusively from the animal agriculture business. If we all would stop eating meat and stop eating animal products, we would end this business and thereby try to save our planet. So, you know, it's hard to try to change the way that we go about our international politics. It's very challenging indeed. You know, we can protest, we can vote, we can do the things we can do, but one thing that you can absolutely control, and I already got this from Gary, is what we put into our bodies. And if we want to save this earth for our kids, for our grandkids, we need to think about what we eat and put into our bodies so that we have an earth.
Good points. Thank you, Dean, for sharing that. Don't be frustrated with those who haven't gotten that message of waking up to life. Appreciate what you have done, what you now see, and just gently and through example, share it with those who are also ready for that lesson. We're out of time, everyone. I want to thank you for taking your time today. And if that number is busy, I'm going to give you one more number to call that will have a couple more people able to pick up the phone. So please write down this number. I'm going to ask your engineer to send over our other number. The 646-926-5422 is one number. And then we have an 877 number, and I'll have that in a second. And it's 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. I got a big venue. I think it's going to be full. We're probably dealing with 1,000 people, 1,200 people. A lot of people want to be a part of it, and for good reason. Much better to be healthy than sick. Much better to de-age than age. Have a nice day, everyone.